Blog Talk Radio.
Tape was taken with lies. CPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids was kidnapped. It was all for the cash. You forced the kid, child running, and the shit is all bad. My kids was kidnapped. It was all for the cash. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash. My kids were kidnapped. Tape was taken with lies.
It started with the way I hooked, progressed, the house I carried it. They couldn't stand a man like me could understand what marriage is. Provided for my wife and this the way that I inherited. Mama raising a man who don't know nothing but to get it. How can they just come and take what's mine and I ain't caught it yet? Never had a GPS, still my life is stripped away. Fighting for my life, the parents, I got tattoos for my face. See you all your bullshit, I might be the one you love to hate. Fuck you motherfuckers, I'll be lying, taking you. Breaking up a happy home, y'all don't like the way we live. Fucking free to find no abuse, then y'all should mind your bitch. We're fucking up my rights for this, you motherfucking know you bitch. Tired, I can take your motherfucker, I'm a bear with all. Lawyer, they appointed me, never even took my call. They falsified my court screen, but I'm lying at it all. All this shit you cover for, they ain't gotta follow law.
Kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DTS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, you forced the kid to childbirth. Man, this shit is all bad, my kids were kidnapped. They was taken with lies. CBS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, you forced the kid to childbirth. Man, this shit is all bad, my kids were kidnapped. They was taken with lies. CBS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, of course the kid, child ring. Man, this shit is all bad, my kids are kidnapped.
Come on, tell me, do y'all feel my pain? Watch my wife cry herself to sleep, and I can't do a thing. On the verge of losing it, swear I'm about to go insane. Praying that I have the strength to make it through another day. Can't begin to understand all the shit my kids go through. The pain they feel or what they think for real is all they've been through. Snatch away, wait, you friends, and broke me when I heard the news. Rotting in the prison cell, shit that I ain't even do. The fight is real, we won't stop, but all the kids are coming home. Playing games today, ain't know the game, I'm with the king of thrones. Lawyered up, got a pitiful picture, now this shit is on. Need to take my family back, and trust me, we don't stand alone. If she is for everyone, we go with what we're going through. Be a voice for all of y'all, the pain I feel, I feel it too. Stitches for the time to change, pushing hard to make it new. All the tricks, y'all, never the hope, damn the choice for you, kid, yeah.
You know, I ain't the only one that's going through this shit. There's a million other people like me in every city, every state. All across this fucking nation. These people are kidnapping our kids. This foster care shit. Man, motherfuckers need to get it together and go up against this shit before it's too late. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. You guys probably know somebody that's going through this shit, man. Y'all gotta stick together. If we stand together, we can end all this bullshit, man. I'm telling you. Kidnapped.
Hi, we have today's show with the Rocky and Bullwinkle show with Chaco of the Mighty Chihuahua, and Raquel was not able to make it today, so I'll be filling in for Raquel with the person asking the question. And then we have also Carlos Vasquez on the line. Hello, Carlos?
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, so I just wanted to fill in the blanks since you've been on last, because you were on, this was a while back, I believe you came on prior to filling out part two in the meeting minutes series. What happened was Carlos Vasquez has a case where he believes he's going to go to trial. He has a case where essentially as an elder, he was taken advantage of to the point where it cost him everything, and everything that he had was taken from him. And at the time when it was happening, I don't think that there was really much you could have done. I mean, is that right, Carlos? I mean, back in June, you know, 23rd, 2009, when this whole thing started, there's really not much you could have done at that point. Would you say that's true?
Yes, Green Line. Green Line.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, based on what I could see, there was really nothing you could have done at the time, but you did do everything you could. I mean, you went off and you attempted to hire attorneys. You hired two attorneys in the beginning.
Yes.
And the case was in Chicago, correct?
Yes, correct.
The case was in Chicago. So, basically, at this point, they pulled you into a case in Chicago, and they ran, it was a fairly large case. There were a lot of litigants, like yourself. I mean, you were one of many different litigants who was also sued for various reasons based on a trademark violation. But you had the seniority trademark, correct? I mean, you were the only one out of those other defendants that actually had a seniority trademark, right?
Yes.
And that makes you a little different than everybody else in that list, because there was a list of, if I saw correctly, it looked like about 8 different litigants that were sued.
Yes.
And that lawsuit was a fairly large lawsuit. There was a lot of people who were sued. There was a lot of money involved in the suit. And there was also a prior suit in Puerto Rico that was not affiliated with the suit that you were in the case. So in this matter, you really had no ability to try to stop the opposing party from attempting to halt what was going on. I mean, the case was happening, there was a lot of activity in the case, and it just seemed that the plaintiff in this case, who was the person alleging that they had the trademark, they could almost do whatever they want. Anything they wanted, they got. I mean, it was just like a landslide during the whole litigation. But really, the purpose of all of this happened to be that you had the seniority trademark. Is that true?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
From your opinion, your legal conclusion is that they engaged in a lot of litigation around you so that they can win against the other parties, and the other parties basically just gave in because they didn't have any kind of standing, so it wasn't even a lawsuit that should have been brought up. Yours is a little different. Number one, your lawsuit should have been filed in Los Angeles against you because you are a Los Angeles resident.
Yes.
But they didn't. They brought you into Chicago, which meant that you had to travel a long way to get to Chicago. And in this case, you contacted the opposing counsel. Very early on, the last time you had come on the show, you basically had put out part number 1 or 2 in your meeting series, right?
Yes, 1 and 2.
So you had either part 1 or part 2. You had sent out the information to the opposing side, and we started the process. So I want to discuss, you know, a little bit about what happened in the process so far. In the process, essentially, there was no feedback in the beginning. I mean, we didn't hear anything from anybody other than we would proof of service the documents, and as your secretary, I proof of service the documents, and I sent it to the opposing side, and I received everything, a good portion of it, not everything, but a good portion of it, came back, written, return to sender, right?
Yes.
Everybody that received it, they wrote return to sender. It almost seemed like everybody was doing the same thing. I mean, it's kind of an unusual thing that people would receive a document and they would write return to sender, especially if you had the right address. Doesn't that seem odd? I mean, it seems odd to me. I think it would seem odd to anyone who looked at it that everybody seemed to do the same thing. It was that everybody's doing kind of the same thing, which leads you to believe that maybe there is some sort of organization. Some sort of organization to the whole scheme. It seems like there is.
Yes.
Now, in your case, when you first started, you were targeting the attorney, right?
Yes.
You were basically bringing on an attorney, and you were discussing the grievance that you had with the attorney, and it seemed rather clear that the attorney was the person who was organizing the whole matter. But the attorney never responded. You first served, I believe it was the attorney that represented you in the case, Cannon. And then after that, you presented to the opposing side, the opposing counsel, and he never responded either. And then you came up with, I believe there was something that was very important. There was an affidavit, right, that came up later.
Yeah,
when we were looking at the files, we found an affidavit. And that affidavit basically showed that a college professor was stating that she's an expert in Spanish and English, and that the words nopal, which means cactus, and linaza, which means flaxseed, do not have meaning in the Spanish language. And it was almost as if they're saying that somehow this is all not Spanish words, but there are Spanish words. Very clearly, they're Spanish words, but when you put it in legalese, kind of like a dead language, you can describe something and you can get around the subject but never actually touch the subject. But they created a series of factual statements that when put together would lead someone to believe that linaza is not flaxseed and nopal is not cactus in Spanish. It would lead someone to believe that. They convinced a college professor to make this statement, right?
Yes, yes.
And in that case, it seems like there was a Ponzi, someone who was like an organizer. And that seemed to be opposing counsel at first. And then he started thinking that your own attorney was in on it because he was throwing the case in a way. And then later on, through the ongoing investigation, you started finding that there were more connections. there were more connections that were happening. So what I wanted to do was to make a request to people in general that if someone wanted to help with various cases. I mean, you have a case, right, that is ongoing, and I think you're also looking to assist other people. I think we're assisting a couple of other people right now who will participate in various focus groups. Now, the focus groups are a little different than the general population groups. Like, assisting pro se litigants is a general population group. It doesn't have a non-disclosure. There's really no terms set. If you're in there, just don't do a lot of advertising and discuss questions at law. Discuss statutes. Discuss how statutes apply in your case. And I think you've been promoting some of that, right, Carlos? You've been promoting some of that. And I think we found, in your case, we found maybe two people, possibly, so far, who could review a forensic analysis in your case. Now, in terms of the number of messages that you've sent to the opposing side, how many pages are we talking about so far that we've sent to the opposing side? Would you say that it's about 300 pages in 7 parts?
Yes, maybe 400 pages.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of paper. There's a lot of forensic information. For example, one of the things that you're going to be putting together is a request for judicial notice, which Carlos is going to take all of the pleadings in the case that pertain to his matter. But he's going to exclude everything that is not pertaining to his matter in the case. So there's matters that were in other cases, there were 8 other defendants, and then he's going to pull out his information. Those bits of information alone in the court record, because it's on PACER, Carlos has a PACER account. And What's that, Carlos?
Oh, yes. I have a PACER account.
Yes. And you have to have access to the filing means. You have to check the PACER account regularly. But within the PACER account, you can download, like, the first copy, the first file copy, that basically shows that the document, what the document name is. The front page of a pleading has a good portion of the information about your case. It tells who is filing it, who is being represented. It shows the attorney, in fact, and the plaintiff. So in your case, you would be both people, the attorney, in fact, and the plaintiff. And there's a difference there, right? I mean, you recognize the difference between an attorney, in fact, and the plaintiff, right?
Yes.
Okay. One is the one who is speaking in court, who basically answers in a legal conclusion or an objection, but doesn't really speak in the English language per se, but rather more along the line of just presenting your legal conclusion in court, because that's the only thing that really matters. When you enter into court, the only thing that matters is your conclusion based on either an objection or a response or an affirmative defense. But the judges really don't want to hear a story, ever. You do realize that, right, Carlos?
Yes, you're right. Nice story. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, judges are not going to allow you to go in and tell your story. You have to be able to tell your story at trial, which, in your case, trial will probably be in a couple of years. I mean, by the time you actually finish up trial and you do the final pleading, because you have to go through your discovery. And discovery could take 18 months. I mean, in your case, how long have you been working on the meeting minutes total since we've been working together on this? How long, how many months has it been, approximately?
Yeah, about 12 months. 12,
yeah, about a year. About a year, maybe a little bit more. A year.
Yeah, maybe 14 months.
What's that?
About 14 months. 14.
14 months, yeah. I mean, generally speaking, within about 6 months, we were able to start preparing all the documents, going through all of the, you brought boxes of paper, and we went through the boxes of paper, and we pulled out the pleadings that looked like they were going to explain your case. And then we basically put out a proposal, somewhat like a proposed cause of action we started with. This was a critical path. We picked initially the gravamen of the complaint. In your case, the last time you came in, was the gravamen of the complaint was seniority trademarks. And I think one of the questions that was raised was, you know, how are you going to prove the Ponzi scheme? Well, we're not going to try to prove the Ponzi scheme. The Ponzi scheme defines an organization, parties that engaged with the sole purpose of organizing a scheme to take away Carlos Vasquez's seniority trademark. He had a trademark, he had a business, it was operational, and then the business was cease and desist. But he had a seniority trademark, so they had to get around it by creating a cloud of litigation. They created a series of litigation with the sole purpose of clouding the issue so no one can see exactly what happened. And it was a very well hidden cloud of litigation. Now, since then, Carlos, last time he came, he had part one or part two. So that was about 140 pages of information to the opposing side, telling, you know, our attorney, the attorney that, you know, basically represented Mr. Vasquez, Carlos Vasquez. And then we sent to the opposing counsel. Neither one responded. And then we moved towards, we found the affidavit with Fernandez. And then we started communicating with Fernandez. The concept of communicating with Fernandez was that we believe that she's been deceived. We believe that, in a way, she was told that this was some harmless, allegedly harmless, error of omission, of information. It was a harmless error of omission.
this harmless error resulted in financial elder abuse, which is a criminal act. To abuse someone who is in their 70s is a criminal act. In many ways, abusing an elder is not proper at all. Especially abusing an elder in another state. Because now, Fernandez, the associate professor, who is, you could tell from her responses, does not really understand the legal system. She understands the legal system like a normal lay person, that the legal system is there to help us make decisions when we can't for ourselves. But what they don't tell is that the court only deals in procedure, only deals in statutory form. That's why there is the answer of the green light. Now, Carlos understands the benefit of the green light process. Answering things in green light allows you to collateralize all of the information, to take all of the information in your whole case and evaluate one particular aspect. Like, Carlos, for example, just as an example, do you feel that Fernandez was deceived? Do you feel that she was deceived?
Yes, she was, yes.
I mean, from your information, by taking all the information in your case and looking at one thing, you made a statement that the word nopal and linaza are not cactus and flaxseed. That particular statement, you would say that she was deceived in presenting an affidavit that attempted to state that she was an expert in the Spanish language and that these two words are not derived in meaning from Spanish words, which is absolutely absurd. It is a conclusive presumption that these two words are Spanish words. But somehow, the Ponzi put together an affidavit, and he filed that affidavit with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO. He filed that exact statement with the USPTO. He convinced a young associate professor that it would be a good idea for her to put an affidavit together. And I believe he also told her, and I believe this is on information and belief, but we'll find out in discovery once Fernandez is served with a petition for declaratory judgment, if that happens. We're not sure if it is. We're trying to resolve it without. But if we don't get an answer from Fernandez, there's no other chance. There's no other choice. You must file a declaratory judgment on a question at law when there are two parties to a difference in law. Here we have a difference. In essence, Fernandez made a declaration stating that she's a professor and therefore an expert, and that these two words are not, clearly not, according to her, not Spanish words. They are Spanish words. And that's the thing that we're asking her now, to look at a two-page declaration that got around the subject, didn't actually address the subject directly, but got around the subject by using legalese. Now, in your opinion, Carlos, the way in which she made that statement was almost identical to the Ponzi's. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, when you look at what the attorney filed with the USPTO and what she stated, they were almost the same. I mean, all he was really doing was going to Fernandez and stating, well, I made this statement to the USPTO. Do you see this as false? And she looked at it and said, no, that could be true. Because it was a two-page declaration that talked about everything except the actual issue, excluding the issue intentionally. It was willful suppression, in essence. She engaged in the willful suppression. In essence, she also was willfully ignorant. She was trying to remain ignorant of the fact that what she's stating is not absolutely true. I mean, there's an omission. She knew that there was an omission of error. Nopal is a Spanish word, and lanaza is a Spanish word. I mean, that was not in her declaration. But the declaration seemed to state that somehow these two words are not Spanish words. But it took two pages to work around it. And that two-page declaration that actually omits that particular statement, that is called a cloud of litigation to hide the gravamen of the complaint. The most important aspect. They're hiding the most important aspect by generating a large cloud of information around it. Why not just say it? Nopal is not a Spanish word and lanaza is not a Spanish word? Because that's a material misrepresentation. That's not willful suppression anymore. That's now a material misrepresentation which represents perjury, or it could be in English called a lie. But a lie is both suppression and a false statement. Could be either. But in this case, she engaged in the suppression, and she remained ignorant of the fact that this would be used in a lawsuit to hurt someone. She remained ignorant of the fact that this was hurting somebody. Because if she had seen the harm that what she said did to Vasquez, well, she would obviously have thought twice about it. But she purchased the fraud. In essence, she took possession of the fraud by, on information and belief, in the case, the presumption is, and a presumption can be made without fact. It is presumed that on or about the time that she signed the affidavit, she received, along with her friend, who was also a professor, grant money. So an undisclosed source funded her grant money for, I think it was like 18-month sabbatical, to travel through South America, through countries that have South American language, and to study the various forms of language used in various forms of Spanish countries, like Spain, Portugal, Brazil, Argentina, are all very different languages. But she received grant money during this time, during the presence of what happened here. She had a signature, and what we know is that her signature was not a real signature, but an electronic signature. Now, so there was an electronic signature submitted by her attorney, but it did not have a notary stamp, which, by the way, is required by law to have a notary stamp with an affidavit. With a declaration, you need a signature. And she didn't have a signature, and she didn't have a notary stamp. So she could, in essence, now state that she never signed it. And by the way, one of her statements in an email, and this is in the latest part, stated that she has no memory of making that statement or signing that document. So she may already be recanting prior to us even filing. She may be recanting the statement. The question is, if we get a declaration from her, well, we won't need to file an action in Los Angeles or Orange County, California. However, if we don't receive anything, we will need three people to go through a forensic analysis, which, by the way, in this particular case, happens to be over 1,000 pages total. Because you have to review all of the information under a non-disclosure. You would be party to focus groups so you can ask questions about the forensic analysis. So the forensic analysis would have to be reviewed from the point of view of a cause of action. The person who would make a declaration has to state that the cause of action is proper, not to state whether the material evidence is proper. The material evidence is considered a fact and evidence for standing, to determine standing. So whoever would be involved in the beginning would determine standing, which is a Rule 56. Standing states, and it's also called a demur rule at the state level, and it's also called a motion to dismiss at the federal level, because the federal court does a test of the subject matter jurisdiction to find out whether it's federal or state. So the federal court has to do that on the front end, which is called a demur rule, basically stating that Vasquez has a right to file an action against Fernandez in Orange County, California. She is a resident of Cook County, Illinois. So she's going to have to come to Orange County, California, where her attorney is, or alleged attorney is. And in the process of asking Fernandez to make a statement, there was a clerk of the court who got involved in Chicago. And this is interesting. I've never seen anything like this before. But the clerk of the court filed paperwork and then got an attorney to file a motion to withdraw and then subsequently appointed a judge and then closed the case. But they never served. During this whole process, they appointed a new judge because they want to open the case in Chicago. Chicago is exactly where the corruption was allowed. But they cannot prove that that Vasquez is subject to the state of Illinois, in Cook County, Illinois, which is Chicago. They can't prove that. As a matter of fact, during all of the different parts of the meet and confer letter, we confirmed that at each part there was a confirmation that we were filing in either Los Angeles or Orange County. Los Angeles is the proper jurisdiction, according to Vasquez, because he is a resident of Los Angeles. So therefore, it would be proper in Los Angeles. But the attorney, who is the Ponzi, is actually based in an office in Irvine. So therefore, it would be proper in the Orange County jurisdiction if you base it on the attorney's address. And we want to base it on the attorney's address because then the attorney cannot object if we're opening it in the jurisdiction that he specifically manages. But there's one other issue, is that the attorney in Irvine refuses to answer. So, in essence, his refusal to answer is actually causing jurisdiction to be proper because he's just writing return to sender and sending it back. So he's denying service, and most likely there won't be any issue with defining service in this case. I've served him proper every single time we've served him. Sometimes we've always done it by email, but we always send to him a copy also by U.S. mail. But sometimes we ask for him to sign for it. And sometimes we actually request his personal signature on the green card for the return address, for the return receipt. So I can prove that I've seen messages go to his email. I've contacted his secretary, had recorded calls with his secretary where we asked her, did you receive the document? And, you know, they said they would check and never called us back. We basically tried to contact the secretary and she would not allow us to talk to him. She said, I'll take a message, but it never goes anywhere. You know, there's enough evidence there for a reasonable person to say, I believe he got it, he's just avoiding it. And if he were to bring it up, and we brought this up in the discussion, in the meeting minutes, if he were, for some reason, in court to oppose service, I believe we could have a reasonable person make a declaration based on all of the evidence that's available. There's recorded audio. There's the actual receipt from the post office. His signature on one of them, where he actually signed for it. Now, it's a direct service, so whatever signature's there is guaranteed to be his signature. So I don't know what he signed it as, but he received it by showing his driver's license. So the point being, I believe we can prove service to him. That's called constructive notice. Once he has been deemed to have been served, then there was constructive notice, and a judge could, based on the judge's discretion, choose to allow that service. And if they do, then proof of service is complete. But this all requires reasonable people. People who understand the law understand the application of the law and can say that the law was applied properly in this particular situation. And proof of service in this particular case happens to be a major issue. Major. People who are receiving it are not responding. Some people are responding back and saying, you know, please take me off the list. I'm like, I wouldn't respond because we're going to keep them on the list. Of course they're going to be on the list. They were involved. They were involved in what I would deem to be mimetic contagion. According to Rene Girard, there was the story of the beggar man in the book of Ephesians, where one beggar man was chosen from a group to be sacrificed so that the group could feel better, that there was this unrest, and the way to get over the unrest is to produce this mimetic contagion where one person is selected to be crucified. And then they talked about how long it took for, once they started defaming his character and then basically engaging against him and then gathering around him, putting him in a situation where he was in the middle, he couldn't get out, and then throwing the first rock. You know, the first rock is the hardest. First one who throws the rock starts the whole process. And that's the expert. That's basically Fernandez, in this case, writing an affidavit with a material misrepresentation. She threw the rock. Now, other people threw rocks afterward, too. There were a whole series of other rocks that were thrown. But she did throw a rock. She may not have even been the first person to throw a rock. She may have been one of the people who threw a rock. She may have been even the last person who threw a rock. It doesn't matter. She still threw a rock. And now, when you go back to the expert, and that's what we're doing here, going back to the expert, Fernandez, and asking her to reevaluate the rock, reevaluate what you stated in 2011. Now that's a long time. We're going back 8 years. A lot has happened in 8 years. She has completely forgotten about her signature 100%. But what's interesting in this particular case with Vasquez, in this particular case, there is one thing that's unique, and that is the Ponzi scheme. We're going to call it a Ponzi scheme. You can call it anything you want, but a Ponzi scheme is organized. So we can look at the Ponzi scheme at the time, and this is what we were mentioning earlier. The Ponzi was sitting in a glass bubble. You couldn't touch the Ponzi. But at the time when the Ponzi scheme on March 23rd, 2011, at the time of the incident, the glass bubble was a bulletproof glass. You couldn't run it, break it down even with a bulldozer. You could shoot bullets at it, whatever you wanted to do. That Ponzi scheme protected the Ponzi. He had bulletproof glass. He had a judge who basically allowed it 100%. He was taking people out left and right in the case through the Ponzi scheme. He was in bulletproof glass. Could not get through it. nothing Vasquez could have done at the time would have broken the bulletproof glass. Nothing. He didn't even put a dent in it. Everything he did, and it was almost perfect. He studied, he worked hard, he rode good bleeding, he traveled to Chicago, he checked pacer 2 or 3 times a week. He was very diligent. But yet, he was not able to put a dent or a scratch in the bulletproof glass. However, over time, 8 years later, we look at the Ponzi now. Interestingly enough, the glass is no longer bulletproof. It's no longer the same glass. There's a lot of differences between now and then. Walker, who was the clerk, got fired. He was the clerk of the judge's personal clerk, not the clerk of the court. Like, the clerk of the court is still the clerk of the court. He's the executive official who is still the clerk of the court. That's the one thing that hasn't changed. But the judge retired. Now, that put the Ponzi in a very different situation. He no longer has carte blanche. Now, he has to basically go to the clerk of the court, an official, an executive position, to basically open the case and then close it and appoint a new judge. He doesn't have the same power. In addition, the attorney that is the Ponzi in Irvine, he is the attorney of record in Chicago. However, he didn't keep his state license in Chicago. He opened up his state license only for this case, and then he didn't manage it moving forward. So he's no longer licensed in Cook County, Illinois, where he can't practice. Even though he got the case open, he still can't practice there. Interestingly enough, the bulletproof glass is weakening. I mean, over time, at the time of the incident, when the first rock is thrown, in mimetic contagion, when the first rock is thrown, the victim is not on par with the Ponzi. The Ponzi is much, much stronger than the victim. And in addition, the victim is being crucified, so for all practical purposes, there is an ongoing crucifixion. They're barely living at that point. They're barely making it. From a legal perspective, they're just crawling. And the Ponzi seems to have bulletproof glass. You can't do anything against the Ponzi. And the judge protects him, the state bar protects him, and even your own counsel protects them. Cannon, who was disbarred for that very action, he was protecting the Ponzi himself. So even Vasquez's own attorney was turning against him. That's normal. Because in mimetic contagion, everybody turns against the victim. That's the concept. Now, looking at this situation 8 years later, things have changed dramatically. Ponzi didn't keep his license in Chicago. The Ponzi doesn't want to be affiliated with the expert Fernandez. Fernandez was given an attorney who's a friend of the Ponzi, but they're not attorney of record in the case. They were on the case, but they're trying to get back in because they have a license, but they're not the attorney of record. So she hasn't even responded, and she thought that this little escapade, debacle, whatever you want to call it, in Chicago, with an executive clerk of the court, sua sponte, on his own motion, putting things into the record, well, frankly, this is an absolute joke for him to do that. But it did try to divert the jurisdiction, but I don't think that jurisdiction has changed. Number one, I'd like to make one point clear, is that Vasquez never responded at all in this particular case to anything that was going on in Chicago. He did find out about it, not by notice. He was never notified. There was never any email. There was never any phone calls. I mean, all the things that were happening to appoint the new judge, none of that was copied to him. He just checks the record with Pacer regularly. So when he checked the record, he saw that there was new information. So he looked at it. He brought it to me, and we decided this is just trying to skew the jurisdiction. So, in turn, we decided not to respond. And it turned out to be the best thing because they never proved service. And that's important. They never proved service, so they can't prove that we knew anything about it. We were never served. They're going to try to serve us later with it, and we already addressed that we didn't serve. We didn't file any responses for that reason. So we're going to copy all of the attorneys and let them know that good try, but it's not going to succeed. We're still moving forward against Fernandez. We've determined jurisdiction is Orange County, California, and I don't think she's going to be too happy about making a trip to Orange County, California. That's a 2,000-mile trip. So she's going to have to find representation. And the interesting thing is that we're saying that the expert was deceived by the Ponzi. Now, in this particular case, Fernandez is the expert, and her attorney in Irvine is the Ponzi. If we're correct, we're trying to prove that she was deceived. If she proves what's wrong, then she'll prove that she was not deceived. If she proves that she was not deceived, then she's the Ponzi, and she would pay for everything herself. But what we're trying to do is prove that she was deceived by the Ponzi, to have a judge look at it, to have 12, and I think we need 12, a full complement of disciples, who would basically take it upon themselves to try to look at this case. And it would take some time. There's no doubt in my mind that someone who wants to be involved in this particular case would most certainly have a lot of reading that they would have to do. They would have to take on the responsibility of receiving 2,000 pages in PDF file and have that available to them, and to look at the case from a procedural point of view and to make an evaluation of whether procedurally these two words did result in the outcome of the case. Because we believe that if she had talked straight and created a direct and proximate statement, that none of this would have happened. But because of a harmless error of omission, well, it's not so harmless. And an omission is similar to extrinsic fraud. It leads to extrinsic fraud, which is fraud, which is, in essence, the lie itself. But if we prove that Fernandez, the expert, had intention, there's a question of law. If we prove that first, he made an omission, second, we prove that she did it with intention. Now, I don't believe that she did it with intention. And that's the whole point of the petition, is that she did make the statement, she was wrong, but that she was deceived, and there was no cause of action for intention or mens rea. In doing so, you're eliminating her from being the party who has to pay for the damages. The person that would have to pay for the damages is the attorney. Now, the attorney could say, well, I represented a client. Well, it's an alleged client. You may have alleged, you may have had a client, but they were a co-conspirator. You took an attorney-client privilege on behalf of that person, attorney-client privilege, work product doctrine, and legal practice. Those are three doctrines of law that discuss why the attorney would be liable individually, outside of his client. The attorney, has a contract with his client. He, the attorney, can sue his client to recover the damages. But the attorney himself would have to bear the burden of the monetary relief. The relief would have to come from the attorney himself. The attorney may not appreciate that. He may say, well, you know, why don't you sue my client? Because we don't have to. That will be the answer. It has to do with charging discretion. We can sue the attorney directly. And these are the basic premise of the case. And if anybody would like to join in, we would be more than happy. So I wanted to, Carlos, do you have anything you would like to add?
No, give me a line.
Okay. And then, so, at this point in time, you're going to start preparing your petition, right?
Yes.
At this point in time, you're going to start preparing your petition. You've already developed the memorandum in parts 1 through 7, and I think we just delivered 7. So you've already developed the memorandum. So now you need to take the memorandum, put the memorandum in a brief, memorandum and points of authorities. You need to download all the files from Pacer, which is going to be a pretty penny. You know, you're going to have to download all the paperwork. All of it has to be numbered and then sequenced and then scanned. From that, you'll have your basic, you know, that's going to be probably 2,000 pages in that scan. And then what you're going to do is put together a request for judicial notice. You're going to describe throughout the documents how this particular statement affected each pleading. That goes into a request for judicial notice, giving the court all of the documents that we're pulling in for this particular evidentiary hearing. Then after that, the story will be fictionalized. So there's going to be a fiction, a legal fiction, which was described here. It's a legal fiction is like a parable. It tells a story to explain a particular issue. So So we're going to put together the statement of contested facts and the statement of uncontested facts. So Vasquez is going to put together every fact in the case that he needs in a statement of fact. Once the statement of fact is put together, we will separate out the contested and the uncontested. Now, uncontested is any statement that was made by the opposing party. That's uncontested. You cannot contest what you state. If they stated something, they must abide by what they stated. Anything that Vasquez puts, they're going to contest. So that's called a contested fact, letting the court know that these facts are what we're going to trial on. We're not going to trial on what they said. We're going to trial on what they contest. And the cause of action is very simple. That these two words, nopal and linaza, are Spanish words. Litigation shows different. A big cloud of litigation, which looks like probably 5,000 pages, well, 5,000 pages says, no, these are not. Now, how did that happen? Well, that's called extrinsic fraud and a Ponzi scheme. That's what I would say. You might say it's different, but that's what we're saying in court. We're saying that it was an organized scheme by the Ponzi, who is the attorney in Irvine. Once you pull this together, and this is going to take probably 6 to 8 months, and while we're preparing these statements, we will be serving the focus group, and we will be serving the opposing party, the experts, the witnesses, and the Ponzi. And getting ready for a joint trial statement. Because what needs to happen is we need to prepare their statements back to us and our statement to the court. Since we're the moving party, we have a right to prepare the joint trial statement. And then what we do is we take their inputs, their cause of action, and we say, this is their argument. We provide the court with a legal fiction as to what the argument is, and we present that in a joint trial statement. It's under a question of law. In this case, Vasquez is moving forward in Irvine, California, so it's California law, and it would be a Section 1138. If he moved forward in a federal court, which he could move forward with a Section 57, which is a motion for summary judgment. This process cannot be taken lightly, and Vasquez absolutely needs 12 people. I mean, if he can only get 8, it's going to weaken his case. But I think 12 people who are solid, 12 people who are of stare juris capacity, I think he'll need 3 people on the front end to get around a demur, a motion to dismiss on the pleadings. He'll need that on the front end for merit because he has not proven his fact yet. So the judge is not going to move on an issue of fraud until he's proven the underlying fact. After the underlying fact is addressed, then it moves to the next step, which is to deem whether it was knowing or not knowing, was their intention. That's a big part of a decision. Whether someone did something by accident or was it intentional? And when you look at this and you see 5,000 pages, 2,000 pages of documents getting around the issue, you know that there was a lot of work put in place to get around this issue. That's the definition of mens rea. intention of the mind. And that can only be done, strictly can be done, by evaluating a declaration by a reasonable person. So what I want to do is take a little break, and then we'll be back with you in after this song, and then we'll be back on. We'll discuss the balance of the joint and cloud theme. So I'm going to play this song by Brandon Metz.
Taken with lies, CPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, a foster kid, childbirth, man, this shit is all bad. My kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, my kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, my kids was kidnapped. Here was taken with lies.
It started with the way I looked, progressed to how I carried it. They couldn't stand a man like me could understand what marriage is. Provided for my wife, and this the way that I inherited. Mama raised a man who don't know nothing but to etiquette. How can they just come and take what's mine and I ain't caught a check? Never have a GPS, still my life is stripped away. Fighting for my life, the parents, I got passion for my faith. See through all your bullshit, I'll be the one you love to hate. Fuck you motherfuckers, I'll be lying, taking people's shit. Breaking up a happy home, cause y'all don't like the way we live. Long as we provide no abuse, then y'all should mind your bitch. We're fucking up our rights to live, you motherfuckers, no bitch. Tired, I can take your motherfucker, I'm a bear with all. Lawyers, they appointed me, never even took my call. They falsified my court string, flat out lying at it all. All this shit is covered for, but they ain't gotta follow law.
Kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped, it was all for the cash. You forced a kid to childbirth, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, support the kids, child ring, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped, it was all for the cash, support the kids, child ring, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped.
Come on, tell me, do y'all feel my pain? Watch my wife cry herself to sleep, and I can't do a thing. On the verge of losing it, swear I'm about to go insane. Praying that I have the strength to make it through another day. Can't begin to understand all the shit my kids go through. The pain they feel or what they think for real is all they've been through. Snatch away, waking friends and broke me when I heard the news. Rotting in the prison cell, shit that I ain't even do. The fight is real and we won't stop, but all the kids are coming home. Playing games for they ain't know the game, I'm with the king of thrones. Loaded up, got a pitbull picture, now this shit is on. Need to take my family back and trust me, we don't stand alone. If she is for everyone, we know what we're going through. Be a voice for all of y'all, the pain y'all feel, I feel it too. This is for me, time to change, pushing hard to make it new. Lost the trinity, y'all, never hope, stand the choice for you, kid, yeah.
You know, I ain't the only one that's going through this shit. There's a million other people like me in every city, every state. All across this fucking nation. These people are kidnapping our kids. This foster care shit. Man, motherfuckers need to get it together and go up against this shit before it's too late. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. You guys probably know somebody that's going through this shit, man. Y'all gotta stick together. If we stand together, we can end all this bullshit, man. I'm telling you. Kidnap.
Welcome back. Hold on. Back with Carlos Vasquez, and
yes.
We wanted to just finalize the plans for trial. We're looking for, again, 12 witnesses, and these are people that want to work on their own cases also, and Carlos will be managing a focus group where people will be able to ask questions, you know, prior to making their declarations and understanding the process, and also working on their own process. You know, you should, if you're a declaratory witness, have your own matter that you're going to take to trial. Have your own particular case that you intend to manage through, you know, a similar declaratory judgment or what would be considered a question of law. You would probably have to find your own Ponzi's, your own experts, your own witnesses, and in doing so, you'll learn through Vasquez's case and going through his trial and his demur and his, you know, following through with his case, you will learn how to manage your own case, very simply stated. This process is called a legal fiction. This particular process is defined based on what would be called a parable in some ways. It's a little adjunct story that describes a question at law. Like, for example, a little adjunct story could be the crucifixion of Christ, the passion of the Christ, which is, you know, the crucifixion of the sacrificial lamb, which defines mimetic contagion. And that definition of mimetic contagion is described on the website probonolegal.net, probonolegal.net, then /, and it will take you right there. But this particular page, it describes this process, but it also describes the actual situation of what René Girard deemed as mimetic contagion. And I've been doing this for 8 years. I've talked to various people who have told me this is spot on to what happened to them. Well, it's spot on because it had to be done this way. They had to, you know, create a willful suppression. Everybody looked the other way. And in the end, over a long period of time, over a long series of actions, they whittled you down to the point where you broke down. And then when you broke down, then they crucified you. It took a long time to break you down, but they did. And in the end, when they broke you down, then they took whatever it is they wanted through the court because you were broken, alone, and afraid at that point. Well, that's the definition of mimetic contagion, and that is exactly what happened to Vasquez. Now, whether you're in a CPS case, or it's a family law matter, or it's an accounting, or if it's a probate, we've seen all of those on the show here. And anybody that wanted to could participate in various cases. Various focus groups are in place, and it's the focus groups. It's the bonding of people coming together who have all been subject to the same thing. And this is important because I wanted to point out that having been subjected to mimetic contagion, you have a unique perspective now that you did not have prior. When the incident happened in your case, you were not knowledgeable of mimetic contagion. You were not knowledgeable of all the people who had suffered from this. You were engaged in blissful ignorance. You may have heard about it, but you turned a blind eye like 99% of the general population. The general population does not view mimetic contagion as a serious threat to them. They might know that it happens, but they don't care because there's nothing in their life that's going to put them in harm's way. However, when it affects you personally, now you become a contagion expert, a mimetic contagion expert. And that's the people that are in the broken family. They are, in essence, experts on this crucifixion that happens to people in the court. That makes you a mimetic contagion expert, unlike other experts. There's no certification for this. You just have to have had it happen to you. Whether you like it or not, it happened to you. And there's like 5,000 people on Facebook who all were subject to mimetic contagion. And there's many, many different groups and advocates and things like that. But consider yourself less than 1% of the population. When you're less than 1% of the population as a whole, you know, this puts you in a different light. This puts you in a position where you were taken advantage of wrongly by a Ponzi scheme, which was bulletproof at the time, but now is weak. Years later, it's weak. So you become a mimetic contagion expert. You become an expert in this particular area. And as an expert, you could see that, like Vasquez, he's going to trial. You could see the paperwork that would be involved. And I want to point out that Vasquez has worked on this case for 8 years. He is of sui juris capacity. When you look at the pleadings, he was doing things well back in 2009, 10, and 11. It still could not defeat the Ponzi in the bulletproof glass. He was not subject to defeat at all. Actually, for all practical purposes, now it's not the same. The Ponzi is no longer licensed in Chicago. He no longer has the connections with the clerks. He no longer has the standing that he used to have. He's not looked at in much the same way. Other people have tried to sue him for the various same actions. So he's a lot weaker now. He's been, you know, his stripes were taken down. And now, 8 years later, he's no longer being sued as an attorney. This is important. This is not an attorney who's being sued as an attorney. You have 2 years to sue an attorney as an attorney. And then you can access their insurance. We're not looking to access his insurance. I don't care about his insurance. The Ponzi is very, very well situated financially. If he loses a judgment, he will pay. And I also believe that Vasquez is owed money in the short term, not the long term. The long term is going to take 2 or 3 years. This is just a conservative estimate. To take this process to trial is a devotion of 2 or 3 years. But if he does it properly by getting the discovery and then moving forward with the injunctive relief, most likely he will gain what he's looking for. He will have standing, he will have his day in court, and we'll see what will be the outcome. But if you try to shortcut this process, shortcut your chance of success. Vasquez is not shortcutting the process. He wants to go through the steps. He wants to get the right witnesses. And I think if you're in his group, you know, we can show the process and you can learn how to put together your own joint trial statement in your case. If you do this, we can most likely find you 12 disciples who will testify on your behalf. And that is the benefit. It's the ability to bring other people to testify regarding a complex parable or complex legal fiction. There's a series of, in terms of legal fictions, a legal fiction is like a doctrine, like attorney-client privilege is a doctrine, work product doctrine, that's a body of law that talks about the work product that's generated between an attorney and a client, you know, legal practice, how an attorney can represent the plaintiff in court and how the plaintiff has no standing to speak on his own once he has an attorney. These are all laws that are set in place. And these are what are called legal fiction. So to create a legal fiction, you need to have these little short stories in your case so you can explain to the judge through a memorandum, which is called a brief, exactly what your question in law is. And if you can properly state it, you can properly admit the evidence, you can properly prove of service, you have a very good chance of going to trial court. And I believe that Vasquez has a very good chance of going to trial court. He's most likely going to have three people to get around the demur, so that we'll get around that. And then before we get to trial, we need 12 people. And by then, we should have that forensic analysis in place. So, is there anything you'd like to add, Carlos? Okay. So, if anybody has any interest, please, you know, get a hold of me, Ashraf Haroon, 714-381-8138. So, we will discuss how to get everybody in for this case. We would like to get this going. And we would also like to see if you're interested, we can bring you in on the assisting pro se litigants page, and we can, you know, help you to create work product within the assisting pro se litigants page under the terms and conditions that are set forth. So, is there anything else you were on mute, Carlos? Is there anything else you'd like to add before we end?
No, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll have Carlos back on. Thank you for listening, and here is Young Prize.
Kid Nat, tape was taken with lies. CPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, you're forced to get childbirth. Man, this shit is all bad. My kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, my kids was kidnapped. Here goes all for the cash, my kids was kidnapped. It was taken with lies.
It started with the way I looked, progressed to how I carried it. They couldn't stand a man like me could understand what marriage is. Providing for my wife and kids the way that I inherited. Mama raised a man who don't know nothing but an etiquette. How can they just come and take what's mine and I ain't caught a check? Never had a GPS, still my life is stripped away. Fighting for my life, the parents, I got cancer for my face. See through all your bullshit, I'll be the one you love to hate. Fuck you motherfuckers, I'll be lying, taking people's shit. Urging up a happy home, cause y'all don't like the way we live. Long as we provide no abuse, then y'all should mind your business. We're fucking up our right to live, you motherfuckers, no shit. Tired, I can hate you motherfuckers, I'm a bear with all. Lawyers, they appointed me, never even took my call. They busted by my court string, flat out lying at it all. All this shit is covered, but they ain't gotta follow law.
Kidnapped,
They was taken with lies. DTS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash. Of course, the kids, child rape. Man, this shit is so bad. My kids were kidnapped. They was taken with lies. DTS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, supposed to get child rape. Man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped. They was taken with lies. DPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, supposed to get child rape. Man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped. Come on, tell me, do y'all feel my pain? Watch my wife cry herself to sleep, and I can't do a thing. On the verge of losing it. Swear I'm about to go insane. Praying that I have the strength to make it through another day. Can't begin to understand all the shit my kids go through. The pain they feel or what they think for real is all they've been through. Snatch away the place you burned and broke me when I heard the news. Rotting in the prison cell, shit that I ain't even do. The fight is real, we won't stop, but all the kids are coming home. Playing games so they ain't know the game of with the king of thrones. Lawyered up, got a pitiful picture, now this shit is gone. Need to take my family back and trust me, we don't stand alone. Get you here for everyone, we go with what we going through. Be a voice for all of y'all, the pain y'all feel, I feel it too. Ditches for all the complications, pushing hard to make it new. All the tricks, y'all, tell the hope, stand the choice for you, kid, yeah.
You know, I ain't the only one that's going through this shit. There's a million other people like me in every city, every state. All across this fucking nation. These people are kidnapping our kids. This foster care shit, man. Motherfuckers need to get it together and go up against this shit before it's too late. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. You guys probably know somebody that's going through this shit, man. Y'all gotta stick together. If we stand together, we can end all this bullshit, man. I'm telling you. Kidnap.
Kidnap.